The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Welcome in, everybody. Thursday edition of a numbers game. We're live from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson in for Gil the next couple of days. Kelly Bidlin is here. And the Open Championship, it is underway. Always a dangerous night, the Wednesday and Thursday nights here on the west coast of the Open, Kelly, for those of us that have to be up early in the morning. I can get away from you pretty quickly, but we might be short on sleep. We are not short on action, though, and hopefully you are not holding a Rory McIlroy ticket as we open the show today. Six over par as he has played his first 16 holes. That's really the big story. A guy who was solid today through the first seven, even par, then a double on the par three eighth. And Kelly, as we get things updated today with a somewhat surprising leader early on. That's really the big storyline, though, the struggles of Rory McIlroy and the weather that certainly has started to get worse as we get into the afternoon.
Yeah, wave. Some royal trouble at Royal Troon, right, Benny? There you go. You're the play-by-play guy. You're supposed to be better with that stuff.
Royal trouble. I'm not Jim Nance. Okay?
It is.
he can do that.
Look, we kept talking all week. Weather. Watch what it's gonna do. This is, I think, a little bit more difficult and a little bit might be a light way of saying it, a little bit more difficult than we were expecting this morning, Ben, or at least I was. And, I think that's a little bit course and conditions, but definitely conditions. And we talk all the time. Yeah, you can't win a golf tournament on a Thursday, but you can lose one. And I think that's with the Open and how many other guys might be affected by it today, Ben. I don't know if I want to go that far with some of these guys that they're completely out of it, but man, you can go right to the bottom of the leaderboard, and man, if you got some bets on some of these guys, it's looking ugly. How about I don't know how many people really bet Ricky Fowler, but Ricky Fowler is six over par through five holes right now. Rory six over. He's heading to his 17th right now. Sahith Theegala six over. He's heading to 18 right now. Max Homa, I mean, he's had a difficult season all year, five over through 16. Tom Kim, five over in the clubhouse. He's a guy that I had a top 20 bet on. Bryson DeChambeau, five over for his round today. It could have been a whole lot worse, though. He got had an eagle on the back nine, a long par save for him. So he's five over right now. It could be a lot worse, though. Man, Tommy Fleetwood, I know a lot of people bet five over in the clubhouse already. He is not looking good. Sungjae Im, five over through his round. He's a guy that I had multiple bets on. It is. You're getting the theme. You could scroll through the leaderboard. There are a lot of ugly numbers out there. Victor Hovland, four over par. If you are remotely close, Ludvig Åberg did work his way back. He was, I think, out to five over at one point, finishes his round at three over par. Was scrolling and looking for his name because I know he was further down there at one point, worked his way back. Solid finish by him to get back to three over.
Not bad, yes. And it's what's funny about it is with how drawn out the start times are at the Open Championship, more so than any other major. We had the first groups tee off 1:35 a.m. Eastern time last night. A lot of us were staying up to at least watch the first groups go off there. Scotty Scheffler, the tournament favorite, he's yet to even tee off. He goes off, Kelly, in about 7 minutes, which is the local 3:10 p.m. Open Championship starting time. Weather right now in the low 60s. It is the wind is about what we expected in that 20-mile-an-hour gust range, but it has been raining off and on as we've gone into the afternoon here, at least at Circa where we're at. You have a lot of the first-round over-under score props, which many of those, to our point, the way we start the show, have gone to the over, Kelly. Scheffler, 69.5. This is a par 71, if you're not familiar. And it leads you into thinking, okay, this is a guy who's been priced at another worldly number and has, at the same time, not had all that much experience or pedigree playing Lynx golf. It leads into, are we at all taking anything away from what we've seen early here, Kelly, translating that into a guy in Scheffler who, throughout the course of really the last year and a half, has been able to overcome any sort of issues that other golfers are facing on the course?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think you would say, of the tournaments, Lynx golf, he doesn't have the best history on, doesn't have a ton of history is more the way I would say it. So it really, at what we've seen this morning, really going to play out, for almost everybody out there, or is his talent going to be just a cut above That will be interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to see him out on the golf course. Guy I'm really got my eyes on right now, Colin Morikawa. He just got through one. He's one over through one already. So, he was a guy that I didn't make any first round leader bets, except I did a couple hours ago put one in on him when it looked like I knew he still had to go. There were still a couple big names that still had to go, but it looked like you kind of get the idea of what conditions were going to be like. And if you could just fight through, three under was as low as you needed to go. Justin Thomas right now, your leader at three under, had gotten as low as four under. We'll point out, we were talking a little bit before, Russell Henley kind of felt like he missed a couple that could have put him right there. Alex Noren, a great round at two under par. Justin Rose, Nikolai Højgaard there at two under par as well. Adam Scott, who's been playing some great golf recently, he's one under par, done for his round for the day. So a few good rounds shot out there this morning.
Yeah, Justin Thomas, your leader in the clubhouse, 10-1 on the live odds board, while Scheffler, who is about to tee off momentarily, you're 4-1 leader at this point. If you had a Romain Langasque ticket at 300-1, raise your hand, everybody. If you did, he withdrew. He only lasted about six holes today, Kelly. So that was our first casualty.
Yeah,
he was like, I'm done. Six holes.
Weather sucks.
Yeah, I need a hot toddy and some warmth. Well, I don't know. He's French, so I'm not sure what the drink of choice would be. Maybe not a hot toddy. I wouldn't power rate that number one. At least for me, what I found the most interesting as far as some of the strokes gained data early, Kelly, it's that the off the tee has mattered the least of anything so far. We figured that not surprising that would be the case, simply because did we think that Bryson DeChambeau would be bombing drivers on every hole like he was in the practice rounds? Mm-hmm. Certainly not, once you had the real weather conditions we were expecting come up. But of the top 12 in strokes gained off the tee, only two of those guys under par so far. And that strokes gained data is only taking into account guys who finished their round today. So I found that fascinating, Kelly, at least on the strokes gained part of it. Justin Thomas, second in the field in strokes gained putting. For those who have finished, he's your leader. But Justin Rose, by far, the leader in strokes gained approach today. Joaquin Niemann, for what it's worth, leader in strokes gained around the green, who finished at even par.
Yeah, it is interesting. I don't think all that surprising, though, is the wind and rain. I mean, it's really the mix. If you're watching at home or looked at any of these pictures, it looks like they're walking through clouds of fog right now. It's just crazy.
I love how the new camera angles they have, the trackers of these guys, it really does make it look more gladiatorial.
Yeah,
and it also makes it look like Royal Troon might as well, this might as well be, did you ever watch Shutter Island, the movie? Like,
right,
you might as well just be hanging out there, with the hurricane coming in. It's like 1954, and it's just like, good luck out there.
Right, that's what it looks like. And, so when you're seeing that on the screen, to hear that off the tee numbers are not going great is not that big of a surprise to me.
Yeah, no doubt. JT, the question with all these guys, and you usually see one player, right, the putter's just on. But this is a guy who, while the recent form has not been there, this is a guy with history in general and has performed very, very well, especially, I think, maybe surprisingly for a lot of people across the pond. You think about Justin Thomas's really good Ryder Cup performance in Rome and what he's been able to do in years past, despite not having, maybe at the Open Championship, the highest results. Question now becomes, can he sustain this? The difference is he'll go out later tomorrow, and you just wonder. It's always tough with the Open, how these early and late waves can sometimes differ with the weather. You go out super early Thursday, now you're sitting on what, at least for now, is a one-shot lead. We'll see if that holds up, but now you're sitting on that until late tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, it did look like, when I was my last check last night and then even this morning, it still looked like if there was going to be any advantage, it would kind of be late, early, I thought at least.
Yeah.
So as far as Thursday, Friday went, the worst stuff looked like it was going to come in late on Friday. But man, this is already way worse though than what I was expecting. Anyway, and we're not really, it's the rain. We knew there was going to be rain. The wind is kind of right where you read, Ben. That's kind of where we knew it was going to be at. So it's just really, you can try to predict all this stuff in the world, but until these guys really get out there and start playing it, you don't really know how tough it is. And it is affecting these guys more than I thought it was going to.
And we still have guys teeing off up until about an hour and a half from now. So that's really how spaced out the last local start on the tee time, 4:27 p.m. Tiger Woods as well, even through two poles, if you're wondering on how Tiger's round has gotten off to that start, par for Tiger. Scheffler about to tee it off there on number one. We will certainly certainly keep you updated as the round continues. Kelly, you're hoping to see some red popping up on your guys here soon.
Yeah, that would be nice.
That'd be great. That'd be great for all of us. We get some birdies out there. Not many to be had today.
There's even this kind of day. Like Tony Finau got in at even par. Hey, Tony, great round. That is good enough for me. I'm not going to be greedy today. You get in around even par. That's good enough.
Only 12 players under par. Now, granted, still some to get underway, but. Yeah, I mean, right now, and this is even including a bunch of guys who have just teed off, but your top 30 includes the even par guys, so that's a great start. If you're at least at even, you feel, honestly, I'd say anywhere, even like the John Rahms of the world who, you know, struggled to a two over. He missed a very makeable birdie putt at the last. But you get into the clubhouse, you know, T50. Top 50 at two over. You're five off the lead right now. You feel totally alive.
I watched a good amount of his round too. I do have one. I do have an outright bet on him. Nothing else, but just the outright. It could have been. It's one of those rounds that could have been a lot better, a lot worse. So you know, Rahm's probably gonna be beating himself up a little bit today. But I think, like you said, you get in there, look at the rest of the leaderboard, realize. Okay, a couple strokes worse, you would have been right there with the rest of those guys.
Look, and Rahm, all things considered, I mean, he gained on approach. He gained tee to green, around the green, putting, just you know, slightly above a field average. He was a little bit worse off the tee, but all in all, not around. There was nothing data-wise that really, you know, jumped off the page, right? It wasn't like this crazy round for John Rahm. T48, if you are in that group at two over par. You know, I realize who is drinking the hot toddy right now. It's John Daly, 11 over. Tied for last.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely.
I mean, he might have been drinking a hot toddy on the course. I told you, right, my story of going to the PGA at Whistling Straits, and my parents were volunteers. This was 04.
No.
And I was out there on the first hole on Thursday at, whatever, 7 a.m. It's like 45 degrees. Wind is just whipping off the coast of Lake Michigan. We're in winter coats in July or August, I think, at the time. And John Daly pars number one and then just lights a cig. And I was like, man, legendary stuff. He was in the first group.
Legendary athlete.
First group of the 04 PGA Championship. Alas, we'll talk about some of the other big headlines in the sporting world. A big WNBA and NBA Summer League night last night. And we'll get into our guest list as well as some MLB futures talk ahead of the second half getting underway.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get ready to win big this NFL season with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on our football special before the end of July and get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. That saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price, and with VSiN Pro, you'll gain access to our daily best bets, exclusive betting splits data, proven betting systems and analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and all our special edition betting guides like the new NFL guide, which is out right now with all the detailed team, division, and conference breakdowns you could ever want. Our expert insights and in-depth coverage will keep you informed and help you make smarter bets throughout the season. Don't wait. Sign up before the end of July. Get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. Sign up now at vsin.com/subscribe. The AFC North on the docket today. We'll break that down coming up in about a half hour. Also, Zach Cohen joins us because it is almost time for Olympic betting, Kelly. Can't wait for that. Also, NBA win totals are out, something we talked about on Monday. So really excited to get Zach's take because we've had a few days to marinate on these. Zach Cohen going to join us coming up 10:30 Eastern. And then Thor Nystrom, we dive into some college football coming up in our second hour on the show.
Yeah, always great to talk college football with Thor.
Love Thor.
Yeah, I can't wait to get Zach on next segment. I did. We'll go over it a little bit later in the show. I did make one win total bet this morning.
Okay.
Some of the Vegas shops finally started to post stuff. And two awards bets? Yeah, two awards bets.
Oh, there we go. Let's fire it up. July 18th, Kelly Bidlin, rocking. Right now, Summer League is basically the only thing day-to-day we can actually bet on. But we should mention the couple of small pieces from the NBA and then the WNBA from last night. You get Bronny James, who scores 12 points, is a high in the Summer League so far, 5 of 11 from the field for Bronny last night. Team wins by 1 point. Remember, there was that prop that was put out there. This is for the regular season, of course. But will Bronny James score 15 points in a regular season game this year for the Lakers, which I believe that was set at -110. And my first thought was, if only these books were brave enough to just hang a no price on that. Yes. I think the entire world would be betting no and hanging out and just, you know, putting that money aside for the whole year and letting it cash. Because I don't know how many games he even plays at the NBA level. It will likely be a lot of G League for Bronny James. But at least it was a guy who, after struggling like we expected, Kelly, looked solid, much better than it was originally. It originally went in the first couple of games. However, I'm certainly in the camp of I'm never one to you know, fault the overreaction and say, oh, this guy made a few shots against basically G League guys or probable, you know, probable European guys when it's all said and done. So I'm not going to take much away from it.
Yeah, it was. Look, it was good to see him hit some shots. I think that as I keep saying, however you feel about the entire process of Bronny James becoming a Los Angeles Laker, that is come and gone. That is done, and I would just be rooting for this kid now because is all the pressure in the world for against on this guy and against him, seemingly for a guy that was a second round pick in the NBA draft. That is just not a spot that, you know, we often see guys, you know, emerge from and play and have incredibly long NBA careers. So I'll be rooting for him. I did watch a lot of that game. I thought I saw some bright spots from Bronny last night. So I think some good things for him to build off of. He was over 15, I believe, from three going into that game last night. So it was good to see him hit one of those early. Some exciting summer league action going on out there. I wish I'd been able to. Have you gotten out yet? Gotten out for a day yet.
No.
Too much open championship stuff.
Yeah, there's been a lot going on.
Yeah.
Too much open championship stuff as well.
You're doing like 18 shows a day here.
Yeah, that's part of it. I keep saying maybe Friday, but that's a big old TBD.
Yeah, me too.
Big old TBD. It's like, depends on how the arena football prep work is going, because I have not had any time to dive into that, to have a game on a Saturday. Bronny, 2 of 5 from three. I say this without meaning to be like a troll in any way. I say this with all sincerity, Kelly, since I did cover the G League for the last 2 years doing games there. Playing the majority of your games for the South Bay Lakers from a purely developmental perspective is a really, really good thing. That's not to, you know, it's not to say, okay, yeah, Bronny, forget about playing in the NBA at least this year, but honestly, the best thing for him, you play in El Segundo, it's an arena that holds about 1,000 people. It's basically a practice gym. But their coaches, year in, year out, the guys, having watched that team, they're always the one of the more well-put-together G League teams out there. Their development is top-notch. That will be a great experience for him. I say that in all sincerity. Just go to South Bay, play your 45 games there, and he will be a much better player by next year.
Yeah, as far as the, you know, betting those props, you know, I think we'll go pro tip right off the top here, Ben. There might not be a no option. You definitely shouldn't be betting that yes.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right on that.
Just wait till, like, if you want to bet over on Bronny props, I'm not saying that's bad. Just wait till he's actually called up into the NBA. Like, it's not. That's right. But it's probably not where he is. Not going to be starting off, I would think, the season there. He will be in the G League. I would think at some point when it is convenient later in the season, he will get the call up to play some minutes with his dad. And I don't know how long that will be. But there's just no reason to bet that now. Wait until the point where he actually gets called up.
Plus,
you could bet overs for that game.
The most likely scenario he goes over anyway is if the Lakers season just goes to hell and they're out of it and it's March or early April. I mean, it's the back half of the season. It's not going to be November that he's getting call-ups and those opportunities to play. We also would be remiss if we did not mention what happened in the WNBA last night. Caitlin Clark breaks the WNBA single-game assist record with 19. That was the final game before this now month-long break here for the Olympics, which Clark notably not on the U.S. women's national team. So yet another splendid troll job there from Caitlin going in. As it has been a pretty much, Kelly, like a month worth of just kind of FU middle finger up performances to the establishment of women's basketball when she beat Diana Taurasi, who was on the team, handily beat the Mercury in that crazy come from behind effort where she was amazing in the game, had the first ever triple double by a rookie as well in that span. And here she goes, 19 assists it's crazy. The rookie of the year race, more than anything, as much as Angel Reese continues to put up great numbers and represents great value. Every time you kind of think is better, all right, hey, these Reese numbers, they got to shorten up, right? Well, Clark does something like this and basically seems to lock up the award every time she does something like that.
I watched a lot of that game, too. I probably watched half that game. She is. It's just, you know, we've said a lot during when she was in college, but, man, I could watch her play basketball any day. It is so fun watching her game. It's just, it does remind you a little bit of, you know, kind of what Steph was back in the day, but even just, you know, at the WNBA level, she's playing more, you know, inside the arc and so much more distributor. And man, she had some great passes last night in that game. It was really fun to watch. And the rookie of the year race, though, it is incredible, man. I know me and you are both kind of, you know, lighter women's basketball fans when it comes to WNBA and college, but the double-doubles that Angel Reese is putting up is incredible. Like, that is, it's amazing. But the one I keep going back to with that, Ben, is it feels like Victor Wembanyama all over again, right? Like, he was not, That dude was not the rookie of the year, December 1st in the of this past season in the NBA. It was Chet Holmgren. He was the rookie of the year at that point. But, like, was there any chance that Victor Wembanyama was not going to win the award with how much hype he was coming in with?
Of course.
That's just what it feels like with Caitlin Clark.
The other part of this that, from the betting angle, is the most fascinating. Because rookie of the year, you're right. What can you really take away from it other than, sure, the number might be too long on Reese, but she ain't winning this award. It's the WNBA All-Star Game coming up Saturday, which, for those not familiar, it is the WNBA All-Stars versus the U.S. Women's National Team. I mean, we've talked about how the ratings have just gone through the roof this year, and WNBA has broken all sorts of ratings records with the Clark games, but this is going to take the cake, you would think, Kelly, with all the bad blood, right? With how polarizing an issue this has become. And the Team USA, usually, right? I mean, you're going to be an overwhelming favorite in the game. The most notable storyline from this event over the years was the misprice that our friends here at Circa had that resulted in, what, the 50-point line move on the total to the under when they didn't realize that it was a legitimate...
Yeah, I forgot about that.
They forgot it was not just an exhibition. I think they priced it at like 239 or something, and it closed like 186 and went way under, something like that. Well, that's really been the only notable thing about this game in the past. Now it's Team USA. They're only a 5.5-point favorite against the Caitlin Clark-led WNBA All-Stars, and total 196.5. Like, you don't think there's going to be some bad blood? Like, that's must-watch TV. And I almost wonder if, as much as Caitlin Clark's kind of had the upper hand with winning some games against these Olympians, having huge performances throughout the first half, I also wonder at the same time, Kelly, I think we probably are thinking the same thing. Like, really only 5.5 for a Sabrina Ionescu Team USA squad who you know, will be taking that game more than seriously. They will want nothing more than to win that game convincingly, to make the statement of, yeah, Caitlin Clark, she's great, but she's not ready for the national team. As crazy of a, as crazy as that is to actually have to go out and prove. But 5.5 seems a little bit light. That's just my
first thought. That kind of rang in my ears as soon as you said it too. I did not look at that. I will have to look at the rosters a little bit more deeply. But that sounds light for sure.
Definitely no misprice on the total this year. You're not getting 230s, unfortunately. So you have Aaliyah Boston, Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese is also part of that. So you have all really the top young players as well. And then of course it is a much more veteran laden. The Sabrina Ionescu, Kelsey Plum, Brianna Stewart, still Diana Taurasi, Asia Wilson, arguably the best player in the WNBA going right now. So, it's a loaded women's national team. They're giant favorites to win that event. And as great as Caitlin Clark is, you kind of wonder, will this be one of those moments in the betting space where, not to say overreaction, but the hype on Clark gets to a point where you could finally take advantage the other way. Fascinating to see where that line goes, because it's coming up Saturday night, 8:30 Eastern there from Phoenix, is the WNBA All-Star Game on ABC. I got to think there will be massive ratings for that. Speaking of the Olympics, Zach Cohen going to join us next, talk some early thoughts on Olympic betting, get his thoughts on some NBA win totals as well when we continue on A Numbers Game.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of A Numbers Game. We welcome you back to downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson, Kelly Bidlin hanging out with me here on the Shield, which I learned earlier in the week. That's what it is colloquially referred to as.
That's right. Show us some respect.
There we go. The Shield. We're live. Open Championship underway. There's a nice little energy here to Vegas for people who've stayed up all night and are unexpectedly seeing live sporting activity up here at 8 a.m. on a Thursday morning. But we're underway. Open Championship. The big headline so far, just to get you caught up, Roy McIlroy struggles. The tournament's second favorite, 7 over par 78 in the clubhouse. Did not gain a stroke in any of the major categories today. Was negative in all of them so far today. The latest, though, Justin Thomas in the clubhouse, 3 under par. Your leader right now, 68 round one for JT. He was second in the field in putting today, 4th in approach. He is 10-1 right now on the live odds board. But a whole lot of other guys, as the way the tournament has played out, very much spaced out so far. 12 players under par as it stands, including some big names. Xander Schauffele, 1 under through 5. Jordan Spieth, 1 under through 3. Jason Day, 1 under through 8 right now. How about Sepp Straka, the low guy out there on the course right now, 2 under through 10, while Justin Rose is one of 4 other guys in the clubhouse at 2 under par, Kelly. So there are some big names doing some damage, as random as this tournament is here through the first almost completion of round one.
Yeah, I think Spieth and Day, you would normally say, are surprising based on how they've played this year, but you know, what were we talking about earlier in the show, right? With these conditions, as ugly as they are, guys with experience, not only at this course, but in playing in many, many link-style golf courses, that experience showing out here early on. So I think that's why you're seeing those guys low. And then we were talking about during the break, I think a big opportunity here for some of the big names, Shoffley, Scheffler, those guys, if you can actually post some numbers in the red here today on a tough scoring day, would be massive.
100%. Scotty, Scheffler birdies three after a bogey on one. Scheffler, the tournament favorite, even par through three holes. Tiger Woods gave one back at the, that was the par five fourth hole, and then he just doubled five. So a tough stretch for Tiger. He was one under through his first three holes, but that, Kelly, in a nutshell, is how quick this stuff can change.
Happens fast. Yep.
Dang. A bad three putt bogey at a par five, and then you double five, and all of a sudden you're two over through five holes. Other guys just getting their round started today, who are off to bad starts. Phil Mickelson, two over through seven. He was a slight favorite in a matchup against Tiger Woods, and then Cam Smith. I just saw him miss a short par putt for a very good putter in general. Three over through three holes for a former Open Champion winner. Cam Smith. So it's not an easy go for a lot of guys out there so far today. The other notable I wanted to mention, Brooks Koepka, has had a roller coaster ride. He was two over through his first three back-to-back birdies on four and five. He is even par there through five holes. We'll keep you posted as the rest of round one continues on this show and throughout the day here on VSiN. We'll also talk some college football this hour. Thor Nystrom joins us in about 25 minutes or so, to be very accurate there. Thor will break down some of his favorite college football angles with our college football betting guide coming out in about 2 weeks here at the network. We right now, though, Kelly, are finishing up our thoughts on the AFC North. That's our division of the day. We talked about the teams at the top. You have two teams nearly the same. They have the same win total in Baltimore and Cincinnati, and very similar in the division odds as the Bengals have taken a lot of action. Not totally co-favorites yet to Baltimore, but about 5 cents longer on those division odds. Then you get to Cleveland and Pittsburgh here toward the bottom, who both have brutal strength to schedule. And Kelly, that at least on the Pittsburgh side, along with lots of question marks about their roster construction, that did trigger a bet for you here for I don't know how many years in a row this is, but you did trigger a bet.
I was just trying to think. I think it's only 3 years in
only
a row. Only 3 years.
Sometimes we tend to embellish, but
I was gonna say, I think it's only three. I would have to go back and check that though. But I was thinking about that during the break, because the Vikings to win the NFC North, I think I bet about 4 years in a row. Steelers are creeping up on that. But, yeah, I mean, look, this is – I don't know if I trust the quarterback situation completely with what we're going to get between Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. I actually have a feeling that we're going to see Fields at some point this year, and if that's the case, it means Russell Wilson did not work out to start. But, man, this schedule is just brutal. And even in this beginning is going to feel key, Ben. I mean, you go out at Atlanta, okay, what – That might be a game you might actually be able to steal. Is Kirk Cousins going to be completely healthy? You know, is there going to be some adjustment period for Atlanta to work with, you know, get that offense humming? Yeah, possibly. And then you go into Denver, which is never going to be, you know, never easy going into Denver to play, but I don't think that Broncos team is very good. I think this Chargers team has some questions as well. The Colts I expect to be good this year, but I don't think they're probably the most volatile team in the league to me this year. I don't think I'd be shocked if they ended up with six wins or, you know, 10, 11 wins with Indianapolis. So, you know, those first 4 weeks are going to be big. But, yes, I am on under on their win total, under that 8.5. I bet that. I did not bet any of the alts yet. And I think by the time those got out and was really staring at them, I'm probably just passing because I made a pretty big bet on that. Under 8.5, but man, this is it's not a total knock on the Steelers, right, Ben? It is so much of the division in this schedule. I do put the Browns, the Bengals, and the Ravens so much further ahead of Pittsburgh. And while we think there is, so much parity within this division every year, it's seemingly these guys beat up on each other almost every single season. Pittsburgh, it wouldn't surprise me if we're talking maybe one division win, something like that within that, and then you got to go face the rest of this schedule here that includes the Eagles, the Chiefs.
That's not
fun. Some really tough teams here. The Jets on this schedule, the Cowboys. This is going to be I think this is going to be a brutal season for Pittsburgh.
It's one of those years, too, where, the classic case of not say overachieving. Some would argue that was exactly what happened for Pittsburgh, but at the same time, they won what they won, and now you are rewarded with a tougher schedule as a result of that. It just so happens, based on the timing and how this all sorts out for them, it is the toughest by opposing win total strength of schedule this year. And the other part of it is, as much as I like Arthur Smith coming in as an OC, and you would like to think that he is the perfect sort of guy to revitalize a quarterback like a Russell Wilson, who needs a fresh start, needs a new mind to help him get the most out of his remaining value. Look around what they have. I mean, I look at some of the positional ratings I have. I mean, bottom five wide receiver, a pass catcher group in the league. The offensive line and running backs are basically the one strength of the team, at least on offense, but this has been traditionally a team that wants to go ground and pound,
right?
And Arthur Smith certainly wants to be a lot more forward-thinking. This will not be 1970s Pittsburgh Steeler football anymore. That feels like a natural clash of your personnel, how it has traditionally been built, versus what your new offensive coordinator coming in wants to do. And at the very least, you have to think that takes time to forge a solution. And when the most important part of your schedule is early,
right,
with the most winnable games, I don't see how that's a logical path towards success.
Yeah, I'm with you. And this is, I think you start wondering, what do you think about the quarterback situation? I mean, is it Russell Wilson? Do you think that's what we're seeing for the entirety of the season?
Oh, when that announcement first came out that you had both would go to Pittsburgh, and I remember being on the air and saying, oh, I'd make that a pick'em as to who gets the week one start.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how you can it's ridiculous to sit there and say one should be that great of a favorite over the other. Now, I was obviously very wrong on that assessment, and the whole reason Russell Wilson agreed to come was because of a guarantee to start week one. He's a -1,000 favorite to get the start, but I don't agree with that sentiment whatsoever. I understand that's why they needed to make that guarantee to bring him there, but you look at the advanced numbers, as much as people want to just rip on Fields every which way, advanced stats-wise do not suggest he's all that far off from how, especially with how far Wilson had fallen with his overall numbers.
Yeah, I think Wilson starting week one, that makes a ton of sense to me. I mean, I just think it's, like you said, it was part of the promise anyways.
Exactly.
But it's easier to tell Fields too, right? Hey, you couldn't hack it in Chicago. You're going to have to earn it here, right? So you're going to be starting number two. But does that mean, by that bye week, I think there's a very good chance we could be seeing Justin Fields by then.
Sure thing. Would not be surprised at all on that. The other team in this division is Cleveland. And I went into the offseason. We did a segment back in February, Kelly, thinking about our early risers and fallers. And I definitely put Cleveland into the faller camp, and it was mostly predicated on Deshaun Watson, a quarterback.
Yeah.
And what would the realistic expectations be for him? What is he actually now? I will admit, I have started to reverse my tune on this Cleveland team as I've dove more into the actual the roster here. What I like to do, at least for my power ratings, I'm not sure what your process is, Kelly. We're all different, but I like to look at a composite of individual position rankings. And so I got to look at, the PFFs, the Sharp Footballs of the world. They do really, really good in-depth 1 through 32 team-by-team rankings at every position, which to me is really valuable. So for me, I've got, overall roster, obviously quarterbacks, O-line, running backs, pass catchers, front seven, and secondary as well as special teams. That's 8 categories right there. There were only 5 teams that ended up rating, if you look at the composites, above average in 7 of 8 categories this year. Nobody rated above average in all 8. Cleveland was one of those 5. And you start looking at the roster, and you sort of realize we are so sour on them because of Deshaun Watson and everything he represents, both his on-the-field struggles, obviously everything off the field. It's a bad quarterback situation, yet still an elite top 5 O-line. Still, even with question marks at health for Nick Chubb coming back, this is a top 12 running back room. Above-average wide receiver core, even though it's not the sexiest in the world. But then a legit top 5 front seven, top five secondary as well, and very solid special teams. And you start going, the value is definitely on Cleveland. It's just, can you get there with the trust on quarterback, the most important position on the field?
Yeah, I think it's been tough because I've been higher on Cleveland the past couple years now. And now I'm just kind of wash my hands and leave this one alone, because I'm with you. I think from roster construction, I think you could easily compare, this Browns team to Baltimore and Cincinnati and say they're right there. But yes, we talk quarterbacks. I've been a big Deshaun Watson guy over the years for his entire career. And these past couple of years, waiting for him to kind of get back to what we once saw just, 3 or 4 years ago, I'm tired of waiting. At this point, I can't buy in. I'm not buying in until I see it get done on the field. So while the defense is still going to be great, I think overall roster is fantastic. The quarterback's a major question, and that leaves them in a wild card race.
I have them the third best roster in the AFC, as crazy as that is. I do like them to make the playoffs at +150, at least for Cleveland in 2024. We'll talk some NBA awards. Kelly's made some bets when we come back.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Into our final half hour of the show here on the Thursday edition of A Numbers Game back from downtown Las Vegas. We do occasionally tend to get tweets on the show sometimes, and Brian chimes in on our airport discussion, Kelly, where he basically says if there are different levels for arrivals and departures, his go-to move is to pick people up at departures on night flights. That is a great pro tip, though. You're not technically supposed to do that, but I would still say it's a good pro tip.
Wait, say that again.
To pick people up at departures on nighttime arrivals, when especially in Vegas.
When
you've ever flown in here at like 9 or 10 o'clock at night, like,
yeah.
It can kind of be.
I never really thought about that. So then, you would walk upstairs. You would go upstairs.
As the arriving passenger, you would go downstairs. It's not that, but it's just not. You go out on the same level as baggage claim. Usually, you're going up, at least in Vegas, to get your Uber.
Right. That's what I meant. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I like that. Pro tip: just keep it to yourself because not supposed to do it. Alas. Big thanks, too, to our technical director today, Matt Hicks, Larry Muir. We got Taylor Sperlin on audio as well behind the scenes. The Koepka number is starting to move a little bit because Brooks Koepka is 2-under through 7 and looks to be in pretty good position there on the par 3 8th. As we are looking at Justin Thomas, if you're just joining us, 3-under par there in the clubhouse. If you're looking at some of these first-round leader bets, though, I mean, Koepka seems like the guy to make right now. Sepp Straka also, who is another guy at 2-under, just dropped a shot. And, of course, right as I say that, Koepka.
Finds a bunker.
He finds the bunker on 8. I thought he had, I guess the scoring, the data was off there. Because he is not far from the pin. The issue is he's short-sighted in the bunker there. But this is a big up and down now for Koepka, who's made 4 straight birdies. Was +750 a second ago to become first-round leader. So want to see how that goes. The other guys at 200, we didn't even mention any of these guys, Kelly, at least worth mentioning quickly. Alex Noren, Nikolai Højgaard, Russell Henley, who I did hear Wes Reynolds on Long Shots mention him as a sleeper.
Yep.
Guy who's great in these sorts of conditions.
I believe he ended up on him. I don't know in what markets, but yes, nice. I do believe he ended up on some
200 par, and then we already did mention Justin Rose, who led the field in strokes gained approach today, at least of the guys who finished their round today. So those are your 200 par guys, and then Adam Scott, Matt Wallace, Chris Kirk, the other 3 in the clubhouse at 1-under par. So far as guys who have actually finished, they are just counting up here on my screen, 8 players who finished under par of the, 100 or so who have wrapped up today.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah, really is. And again, I think a huge opportunity here over the next couple hours for some of these big names to post some low scores. While some of the other big names, Rory, Bryson, really did struggle today. So Thor's going to come on with this next segment, some on-air housekeeping.
Beautiful.
Here. So I'm going to throw some new MLB markets at you,
yes.
Ben, that got posted that we were talking about the other day. These are markets that I don't believe anybody had posted before the season.
So what's crazy to me is, yes, just precisely the timing, because when have you ever heard of an awards market that just books are like, 90 games into a 162 game season, we're just going to post them.
Yeah.
When does that happen? Rolaids relief men of the year in the AL and NL, those odds are now up, as well as manager of the year.
Yeah, I don't remember. The only thing I could think of when we were talking about that the other day was, when did clutch player of the year get posted for the first time in the NBA, which I believe was the 2 seasons ago was the first time they ever started listing that. But I don't remember when it was, but I'm sure it was before the season.
Clutch player is up right now, if you're wondering, NBA. Yeah. Steph Curry's the favorite at 10-1, which, sure. I mean, good luck.
Actually makes a lot of sense that award is becoming kind of hilarious to handicap, because you need who's the go-to scorer on a team you expect to be in a lot of tight games, right? So you don't want a team that's going to be really bad or really good. You need a team that's hanging around 500, and that was, it was DeRozan and Curry battling for that last year, which made a lot of sense. Those were 2 teams that were stuck in a lot of close games, and those are the guys who always get the shots at the end of the game.
Makes a lot of sense. Go figure.
I might actually make a bet in that market this year. I don't know. 10-1 actually sounds pretty fair to me on Curry.
That's so funny because my first thought was like, who would bet Curry? But apparently I'm the idiot. So, but what's funny, yeah, you have these Rolaids relief of the year markets, AL and NL. And a lot of this, I mean, if you're looking at the handicap, basically the way these odds have been set up, it is as simple as it gets. It is who leads the league in saves, and we're just going to order our odds by that. So Ryan Helsley actually leads the major league in saves. These are broken up between NL and AL. Helsley, 32 saves so far. Kyle Finnegan, who is actually third in the odds board, he has 25 saves. Robert Suarez, who has been the Padre closer, 22 saves. He is tied with Raisel Iglesias on that 22 number. Suarez is the second favorite at plus 350. Iglesias up 12-1 so far. If you go down a little bit, we'll start here. Just this is purely NL. Trevor McGill, of all people, 25-1, who was not expected to be the closer for Milwaukee at the start of the year. He is at 18 saves. I would first off just scratch any of those Brewer options because Devin Williams is about to be activated from the 60-day IL pretty shortly after we get underway from the All-Star break, so no point in betting the Brewer guys as long as they are. But it cracks me up because you have, you know, these are the smallest of sample sizes on these relievers, right, Kelly? So, I mean, you've got some of the biggest deltas of current ERA, which for relievers is sort of a ridiculous thing to look at, but yet this is a voted on award, so people are still going to look at that, versus expected ERA and expected fielding independent pitching. And there are some guys who clearly have been very, very fortunate so far. You know, Helsley, case in point, 357 xFIP, but a 236 ERA to this point, 32 saves and 41 appearances. Not a guy I would be interested in betting here. If anything, it's probably, you know, at the same time, like I would say it's probably Raisel Iglesias when you're 22 saves and 36 appearances. That is a team in Atlanta that has struggled so much. Like, you would kind of figure for a guy of his ilk, 22 is like the minimum you would get through this part of the year.
Yeah.
And I think I'm also higher on Atlanta than a lot of people just from a power rankings perspective. But that's a team who, if you are believing in them to not totally like turn it around, right, and all of a sudden win at a crazy pace in the second half, but to at the very least play closer to their perceived strength and their perceived value, that's a guy in Iglesias who is going to get, I would say, of anybody in the NL, the bulk of the closer opportunities here down the stretch.
So,
and, you know, 12-1, again, you're now, look, you're 10 saves behind Helsley, but I don't believe this award is as simple as, okay, you just, whoever has the most saves,
okay,
you just give him that award. And that's what's kind of what's hard to parse together about this. Iglesias, 2.02 ERA this year. So the raw numbers are actually better than Helsley. Just the opportunities because of the team struggles have not been as great.
Now, does this traditionally – I understand what you're saying on the saves. Does it traditionally go to a closer, though?
Generally, yes.
Okay, so you almost – I think the simple handicap here, right, is, okay, look closer – and look on a team, I think, like you're talking with Atlanta, right? They either a team that is good or you're expecting to get better who will have opportunities for a closer to come in and earn a save, right? That, I guess that would be the easy starting point if I was actually trying to handicap these and look at these. But then I think you can start comparing some of those. But, yeah, I think you're probably just looking more at the top of the board here, but looking for some guys that are going to be on teams that are going to put them in a position to possibly pick up a save.
Yeah, and what you know, what's funny is they read so – the history of this as well, that's where it's a little bit – you know, you kind of have to parse through it a little bit interesting because – they had so the Rolaids relief man was the year award was actually discontinued after 2012. They transitioned this into the reliever of the year, which is named after Trevor Hoffman in the NL. It's the Trevor Hoffman NL reliever of the year award, and then the Mariano Rivera AL reliever of the year award, with the exception of 2020, where Devin Williams was a setup man and won this with zero saves. It has always been one of the preeminent save men, and that was a year, the COVID-shortened year. Williams had just insane numbers. He had 53 Ks in 27 innings at a .63 whip. They gave it to him that year. But Williams is actually your two-time champion. He's the defending champion, that 36 saves last year for Milwaukee. Felix Bautista winning it last year for Baltimore with 33 saves. I really, you know, I want to make a case for Mason Miller on the AL side. Did you watch him in the All-Star game, Kelly?
No.
Dude comes in. He's throwing 104.
Whew.
He's 5-1. So by relief pitcher war, it's Mason Miller, and it's not particularly close. Like, he's a half win more valuable than Emmanuel Clase on the AL side is. The issue is Oakland stinks.
Yeah.
Miller only has 15 saves. Clase has 29 for a really good Guardians team. And Clase has a .81 ERA, even though, you know, the advanced numbers indicate there should be regression there, like anybody with a sub-1 ERA. It's hard for me to see a world in which Clause does not win that award, as much as I love Mason Miller.
Yeah, it's you know, if you're watching at home, one of these four team logos doesn't belong, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
When you're looking at Guardians, A's, Yankees, and Orioles. So I think you're I think you make a great case why Mason Miller is there and why he's even in single digits, right? 5-1, and what you're talking on him is probably impressive enough. But, yeah, this one, it's kind of comical to me that you post this for the first time during the year.
Seriously.
And it's you start with a minus 650. Here you go.
It's also – it would really stun me if somebody other than Stephen Vogt won this, the AL Manager of the Year, the award.
Oh, okay.
Vogt's minus 150. Look, first-year manager comes in. Cleveland has been awesome. Now, a lot of this just depends on – and right now, I mean, Cleveland and Milwaukee are probably the two biggest question marks of teams leading their division at the All-Star break. Will they be able to hang on? Vote's your favorite right now for the Guardians and the AL. Pat Murphy, who took over for Craig Counsell on the Brewers' side, is the favorite on the NL. Admittedly, only even money because Rob Thompson of the Phillies, and that team has had an amazing year. Thompson second on the odds board at plus 130. I would probably lean more on the Thompson side, if I'm being honest, just because of how good Philadelphia has been, and I do worry about the Brewers sustaining in the second half. Well, I certainly believe Vogt is going to win that award on the AL.
Yeah, I mean, if they win that division, if you think they win that division, he's probably the guy who takes that home, right?
Good to
minus 150 is probably bettable.
No doubt, it is. Thor Nystrom on college football to close out our show next.